This fall in love with Cozy. Nothing says autumn like wrapping up in the rich, warm colors of Minky Couture. From golden ambers to deep burgundy and rustic browns, Minky blankets bring the beauty of the season right into your home. Perfect for crisp evenings, family time, or gifting someone special. Fall in love with Minky and shop your favorite fall colors today at minkycouture.com.
Okay, folks, you are listening to another episode of Life on Planet Porky. Welcome aboard, fire up the rocket, get into outer space. It's a different world out there. I'm afraid that you're all locked in at the moment, all self-isolating, all doing your bit to try and get over this horrible virus. So you can't come to us, but Leslie Ann and I can come to you. Leslie Ann, how have you been, my dear?
Oh, here we are, the lockdown liberators, the right. Friends in need in your hour of need. Right. So, yes, all very well, thank you. We're just getting on with it. I was rather impressed to see the Prime Minister addressing the nation this morning, were you not?
I was. I'm not sure what I thought about it, though, because I wanted him to come out all guns blazing and I wanted him...
I thought he did.
Well, I thought he didn't give us much hope of restrictions being lifted. In the near future, and I suppose with his near-death experience, you can understand his caution.
Well, is that what you were expecting, for restrictions to be lifted? Because it's way too soon for that.
Well, yes, but I'm scanning all the Sunday papers, the papers Monday morning and the papers Tuesday morning. Believe me, there's going to be, you know, enormous pressure on him now from what I know is the hawks in the cabinet to say, come on, we've got to get moving. The other thing is, Leslie Ann, I go out sort of every other day, you know, shopping, collecting medicines, exercise. And there's no doubt about it, people are taking matters into their own hands. Traffic has, you know, doubled in the space of a couple of weeks. There's more people on the streets. I think, you know, people are shaking off the overcoats of self-isolation and going their own way. And that's a dangerous thing.
Incredibly dangerous, because we are only just coming through the peak. There will be a second one. If everybody gets complacent, that's when it's going to kill very many more people.
Yeah.
I think people are idiots. Sorry to say. The pictures coming from the M25 are ridiculous.
Yeah.
Everyone needs to take more care. And I really do think that restrictions need to be stronger than they are right now.
Well, yes, I agree with you. If there's going to be a clampdown on self-isolation and lockdown, then they need to be enforced very, very much more rigidly than they are now. I've got a mate, right, who lives on a boat in Spain. This guy used to be a journalist. He went to Spain freelancing, made a very good living and all that. And then in the end, he decided to live on a boat bobbing around in the harbour at Puerto Banús, you know?
Very nice.
Yeah, it's very nice. He's still got property there, which he sort of holiday flat he rents out, lives on this boat, and the worst thing he did was to go and designate the boat as his home. He thought he'd be able to, you know, he takes the boat sometimes to Gibraltar and that sort of stuff, you know. Anyway, the Spanish authorities clamped down very, very strongly. None of the boats were allowed out of the harbour. Not only that, you're only allowed as far off the boat as the end of the pier to pick up a food delivery once a day, and that's the total amount of your exercise. And for a lot of the day, you're not allowed on the deck of your boat because those boats are all very close to each other, and the authorities are regulating it that only one person every six boats can come out for an hour.
Well, I'm not surprised. I mean, it was a bit of a foolish decision that he made, wasn't it, to go and live on a boat? He must have known, given what's gone on with all the cruise ships and so on, that boats of any kind would be locked down and that he wouldn't be able to move freely around the ocean.
Well, he's on the boat on his own, so he thought, oh, well, I'm in isolation already. It's like the argument people are saying about cars. What's wrong with me getting in my car and driving 200 miles? Well, the answer is you're transporting the virus 200 miles, and what happens when you get to the other end, you know?
Exactly.
Yeah.
So everybody just needs to carry on taking care, listen to the advice. Yes. We don't like it. Of course we don't.
Yeah.
But we're the lucky ones. We're not in a high rise on a 17th floor somewhere with three children going crazy, are we?
No, I totally agree. But, I mean, there are some, you know, there's idiots and there's complete idiots in this saga. And the complete idiot for me is a young Everton footballer called Moise Keane, right? And this guy... It's interesting, this guy. This guy's 21. He's Italian. He came from Juventus. And Everton got him for a sniff, about 34 million. He was already an Italian international. And Graham Souness, who I think is a great football pundit, questioned the transfer when it happened and said, I can't understand why Everton haven't had more opposition, you know, in buying this boy, and how come Juventus have let him go? And it turns out this guy... held a party over the weekend, a rave that went on all night at his apartment, you know.
I saw it. He had lap dancers in there and everything else.
Lap dancers and everything else. And that's the third time he's breached rules at Everton. Another time he was dropped because he didn't turn up for the briefing on the match, on the day of the match on time. Another time he didn't turn up for training. This guy's trouble, you can tell. He's got disciplinary problems.
So you Juventus wanted to get rid of him.
Exactly.
You know, questions were not asked, were they, really?
You're absolutely right. And that really gets under my skin, and will get under other people's, because this is his sense of entitlement, because he's a young, very talented footballer. I can tell you now, Leslie, you probably know better than me, you've mixed with many more footballers than I have in your family, that his attitude is so wrong, his career will peter out.
Yeah, it will. And we've seen it so often, haven't we?
Yeah.
I mean, they have all the brains in the feet.
Yeah.
Sorry to say, there aren't very many studious, intelligent footballers. You know, they get by, but the money goes to their head. They think they're invincible.
Yeah.
They believe they can do anything they want to.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to defend footballers here. A lot of them are very bright. And, you know, even people like David Beckham, who people thought were dim, he's done all right in life. And so is Wayne Rooney, you know. But anyway, it's the sense of entitlement, which I don't like. And it happens a lot with continental footballers. And I'm not being anti-continental, but it does. We have different rules in this country. Now, one thing that lockdown and self-isolation has given a lot of us the time to do is to reflect on our lives, okay? I don't know whether you have spent long hours, you know, meditating, navel-gazing, or thinking about the life that's gone, but I certainly have, because I'm in my apartment and on the walls there are pictures that remind me of things that have happened in the past. I've done a lot of what you might call decluttering. I've been throwing out, you know, books and all sorts of things like that, and football programs, and that reminds me of things. And I saw a story which touched a nerve recently, because one thing I've been doing is thinking back throughout my life, could I have got it right at any stage? And you know what? I was only thinking the other day, did I get it right in my first ever relationship with a young lady called Trudy? And my followers over the years will be aware of Trudy, Leslie, and I've spoken to her before. But I went out with her from the age of 16 to 21, and then had to make a specific decision whether I wanted to spend the rest of my life with her or whether I wanted to pursue a career in what was then newspapers. It wasn't the media. It was called the newspaper industry. I chose the latter. Now, the reason I'm bringing this up is because there's a terrific story which I've been examining in detail. Val Kilmer, very famous. For me, he was best in Top Gun as Iceman, the pilot. He says that he cries every day and has done for half a year when he thinks back on the relationship he had with Daryl Hannah, the lady who played the mermaid in Splash, I think.
Yes, she did. Oh, well, he's got no chance there, has he? I mean, she's married to Neil Young, for a start.
Yeah, well, Neil Young's just a boring singer, isn't he?
Oh, no, not at all. He's a musician. She's always had a thing for musicians. She was with Jackson Brown for quite a long time. But she's got a very happy marriage with Neil Young. They are eco-warriors, the pair of them.
Right.
They're always getting arrested. So they belong to the Cowboy and Indian Alliance. They're going around sort of driving biodiesel cars. They live in a greenhouse.
Yeah.
They've got solar power, all of this kind of thing. So they're very environmentally friendly. I don't see Val Kilmer living that kind of lifestyle, do you?
Well, no, but I feel a bit sorry for him. Kilmer, whose films include, I'm reading the report here, Top Gun and Batman Forever, said, Lord knows I've suffered heartache in my life, but Daryl was by far the most painful of all. Neil Young, I always used to love you, but I'm afraid I hate you now. He says this is a new memoir he's published. He says, I knew I would love her with my whole heart forever, and that love has lost none of its strength. I'm still in love with Daryl. When we finally broke up, I cried every single day for half a year. I mean, why didn't they just stick with her?
Well, question, right? Can it be possible to be in love with somebody who doesn't love you back? I think love is a two-way street.
Well, I think people loved him to stay with him for 2 years.
Yeah, but if the love doesn't exist for one party, then it's no longer love, is it? It's a sort of longing, but it's never going to be fulfilled because the other person doesn't want it.
Mm. Well, maybe my situation was different because we did both love each other. I mean, we were first loves, you know what I mean? Not literally, but to all intents and purposes, a very long relationship, 5 years. But I felt awful leaving, but I had to. And I had a very successful media career. And it's getting even more successful. I'm working with you now, Leslie Ann, you know what I mean?
Was it worth it? Was it worth sacrificing love affair?
Yes, it was, because I tell you why. This all happened in the city of Chester. Chester's a small city, okay? Now, I worked with another bloke on the Chester Chronicle who was the sports editor when I got there, and he was a sports editor for the next 40 years, okay? And he used to go home every day in his Ford Escort to his little semi-detached house and have lunch with his wife and then get his Ford Escort and drive back to the office for the afternoon shift at the Chester Chronicle. I mean, you know, I couldn't think of anything more dull. And at the opposite end of where I wanted my career to go is where he ended up. But I've never stopped loving Trudy. And the reason I've never got married or never settled down with anybody in the 40 years since is because I've never met anybody I felt about like I felt about her. And
so did you ever try to find her again rekindle the relationship?
Well, this is what I'm coming around to now. Since lockdown, I thought to myself, I wonder how Trudy's doing. I wonder if she's getting through this. I wonder if she needs assistance, if she needs help. But I've been thinking that for about the last 10 years. And one of the reasons why I've tried to expand everything I've done. So I've done national radio, national television, written columns for newspapers, done radio every day for about the last 15 years. And even if she's not a sports fan, somebody she knows, you know, whoever she's with now, or if she's got a son who one of my other girlfriends had and pointed me out to his mother. I can't believe that my attention has not been drawn to her over the last 20 years. I haven't had a word from her. When I've tried to find her by contacting old friends, they've got no, you know, contact numbers for her, lost trace of her, all that kind of stuff. So I'm, you know, in a real quandary because I feel guilty at the breakup of the relationship, and I feel even guiltier now if she's now suffering when I want to help.
But Mike, you're one of the greatest journalists ever to stalk Fleet Street. If anybody can find somebody, you can.
Yeah, well, I can.
So, you know, with all the resources at your fingertips that we have today, there's no reason why you shouldn't track her down and see how she's doing, and you never know.
Yeah. Well, I don't want to track her down if she doesn't know who I am. I thought she'd come forward by now. Lots of my other girlfriends over the years have come forward. The one I told you about actually contacted me because she went on to marry somebody, had two sons, both Manchester United fans. When they were 16, she just happened to be listening to their radio in the house and thought, you know, I know that voice, and it turned out to be me, you know what I mean?
We always want the one we can't have.
Yeah,
like,
well,
you know, maybe she's your ideal. Maybe she's your Lady Madonna, and maybe there is somebody else out there for you.
Yeah, but I'm a bit worried that something might have happened. Maybe she emigrated to Australia or something, you know, or maybe, you know, God forbid, she's not around anymore. Because that was another one. I had another girlfriend, and she contacted me after about 5 years, and this would be 10 years ago, to say, you know, how are you doing and all that. She'd gone to Scotland, she got married, and she told me she had ovarian cancer, okay? And I said, that's terrible. But she sounded completely fit and healthy. She'd got married happily and had children. And I said, well, where will this all end? She said, I'm afraid I will, you know, I will die rather young. And I thought it was all a bit, you know, surreal and all that. And the next time I heard anything, I got an email from her husband to say, sadly, she had died and had left two teenage children. And so I'm just worried that, you know, that scenario might have happened again. I don't know. But
well, that's very sad. You know, try not to worry because sometimes people disappear for a reason. Yeah, sometimes they just want to disappear, you know.
Yeah, could be.
But you've got that very lovely memory to look back on, the the lovely 16 to 21, which is a very precious time in our lives.
Yeah, I agree.
First love never really fades.
Yeah, it was very hard breaking up, by the way, because you didn't want anybody else to, you know, to start going out with her. You know what I mean? You just didn't. Have you ever had a relationship like that?
Yeah, I think we've all had a first love. Mine actually, you know, the sort of love of my life wasn't the first one.
Right.
But he certainly came along and it couldn't work out for various reasons. Yeah. But there's never been anybody else that could even come close to how I felt about him.
Really?
So, yeah. So there's, I don't want to go through the motions and just date for the sake of it. No. And, you know, just marry somebody because they tick 3 out of 18 boxes, which a lot of people do.
Yeah.
And lots of my girlfriends who got divorced over the years, they've got married again because they prefer the status of being married.
Yeah.
And there's certainly a lot to be said for that in midlife.
Yeah.
But they go through the motions and they confess that they're not really happy, but they did it on the rebound. I'm so glad that I didn't do that.
Yeah. Well, funny enough, I read a thing at the weekend about Britt Ekland, you know, amazingly stoic woman. She's 71 now, looks great. Former girlfriend, of course, of Rod Stewart. She's been on her own now for 10 years. And she says, I'm not on my own. I've got me. And I'm very happy with me. And I don't need anybody else in my life. So I wonder, I mean, we worry all the time about people being lonely in self-isolation and lockdown. But I wonder whether some people have been liberated into learning a new way of life. And that new way of life is to actually do it, you know, as a one-man band or one-woman band.
Oh, it's preferable to be on our own than with the wrong person.
I think,
you know, after this lockdown scenario, there are going to be thousands of divorces because people can't stand the way each other chew.
Yeah.
You know, that all the little things that annoy us about another person, they're all enhanced and exacerbated by being in close confinement.
I totally agree with you. And do you know what? Over the years, I've met people, men and women, who were terrified of being on their own. I knew one bloke, I had a friend, he went through 2 divorces, but he could still never be on his own. He didn't even understand the pain of marriages that don't work. He was desperate to get a, you know, another partner in life again. And as for women I've met during my life, and I don't say that dismissively in any way, the fear that young women have, you know, you see it in their eyes when they're about 27 or 28 as we're, you know, moving through our careers in Fleet Street, and the fear that, you know, I'm going to end up left on the shelf, you know, I don't know what to do, throwing themselves at people. I could never understand that, but I do understand emotionally a woman sometimes is in greater need of a partner in life than a man.
I disagree with that. I've known lots of men who need looking after.
Yeah.
I think men at a certain age do need mothering. Yeah. I've had quite a lot of offers, I have to say, and it's quite worrying.
Well, that hardly surprises me.
Well, no. But from men older than me
who
want to be looked after. And I'm thinking to myself, look, they haven't invested 30-odd years in me, that they've earned the right for me to be their mother.
Yeah.
Because they don't want to get old and decrepit and be by themselves and not have anyone to do their laundry, do their cooking, do the shopping. They just want a mother.
Mm.
And I'm not prepared to be a mother to somebody who hasn't invested in me.
Yeah, well, no.
So I'd rather be by myself. You know, my company is fine.
Yeah, well, funny if you say that. Every time we hit on a particular aspect of living in life, I seem to have an example. I had another girlfriend many years ago. And
you had a lot of girlfriends, Mike.
I did, actually, in my youth, yeah.
he said nonchalantly.
It's difficult going out with 3 women who all work in the same building at the same time.
What, you did that?
Yeah, when I was at the Express. The Express building.
You dirty dog.
The Express building on the south side of Blackfriars Bridge, right? I was literally going out with 3 women, 2 whom worked on the same floor and 1 who worked on the floor upstairs. And it was a real juggling act, you know. But anyway, that's by the by.
How did that one work? Did you end up with them all at once or something?
No, they all left me in the end.
Well, serves you damn well right,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah, which is always... Actually, I finished with 1, another 1 left me, and the 3rd didn't work out because, unfortunately, she was already committed. So that was going nowhere. But
haven't they always said, and you didn't take this advice, you do not do it on your own doorstep, right? Because you're the one who's got to clear it up.
Well, it can cause problems when somebody's throwing a fit at you and getting into your face on a crowded newsroom floor. I agree. But
question, do you regret never having got married and had your own children?
No. I don't think I'd have been mature enough to be a father, honest to God. And also... I think that to have not got married because I didn't think I could handle the responsibility of marriage. I was always so career driven. I had no time for anything else. And I knew that I wouldn't have time for anything else. Okay. And I think I'm a better person than lots and lots of my mates in Fleet Street who blithely sailed into marriage without thinking it through properly and thinking about the sacrifices they'd have to make, only to be divorced 10 years later with two young children being passed around like parcels between two homes and their mother and their father, and generally causing great misery. I'm a better person for having realised I didn't want to do that.
Yeah, good for you.
Yeah.
There's room for all kinds of people in this world, right?
Yeah, sure. Anyway, listen, talking about the realities of lockdown, what are you doing about your hair?
I'm cutting it myself.
Oh my God.
There's not a lot wrong with that because I have long hair. So all I do is hold my head upside down over the bath.
Right.
I've got proper hairdressing scissors
right.
and a nice long comb. And I just run the comb through it, make a straight line and cut across the bottom. And it's very easy to chop into a fringe. You know, I can see why men are having such a problem because it's not so easy to cut short hair.
No.
I don't think. And you can't see round the back. You've really got to get somebody else to do it.
Yeah,
but I mean, having seen Boris's hair on television this morning, I don't think any of you need to worry.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. I've got a very professional haircutting thing for my beard, which I trim, you know, three or four times a week, and it's wonderful. Honestly, it's just like something you get in a barber shop. You know what I mean? It's you just rub it across your beard, and it trims it very neatly and nicely. But trying to use that on my hair, you're absolutely right. And my problem is that my hair's thinning now and it looks silly if it gets long. The older you get and the thinner your hair get, the shorter it should get. You know, I can't stand seeing, you know, a 60-year-old hippie with hair down on his shoulders but no hair on the top of his head. I mean, it's ridiculous. So
lots of men are shaving their heads right now. Lots of my daughter's friends are shaving.
I think that's horrible.
Do you think you might not go that route?
No, I wouldn't go that. I'd look like Buster Blood Vessel.
There's nothing wrong with that.
Well, you say that, but I mean, I think you look absolutely ridiculous, and I certainly won't be doing that. Listen, just talking about pop stars, as you are the rock chick writer extraordinaire. Did you ever have any dealings with Woody Allen?
Thank God I didn't. What a creep that guy is.
Well, that's what I think, yeah. He's
I hate the fact that he's brought this book out. What is it called? Apropos of Nothing? I mean, I just don't want to hear about him. Yeah. What he did, as far as I was concerned, was the most heinous crime. He's got away with it. He's walked free. He's married to a woman he brought up as a child. I know she's not a blood relation, but he brought her up.
He had to marry her, otherwise he'd have been accused. He would have been charged with sexually assaulting her, I reckon.
Yes, but that's no defense. I checked this one out. No. I checked this one out because when I was writing about Bill Wyman, who of course married Mandy Smith when she was 18, but they'd been having a relationship since she was 14.
Yeah.
And I was told categorically by a lawyer that the fact that he'd married her was no defense.
Yeah.
So I do not get this Woody Allen scenario. Even his own son has, he's a Pulitzer Prize winning journalist, isn't he? He's even written a damning dissertation about his father to say that he's absolutely guilty of everything he's accused of.
Accused of assaulting other children, which he and Mia Farrow were supposed to be looking after. And you're right, his son, which scandal did his son uncover in America? It was...
It's Ronan is the son, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I can't. He's
scandal recently he uncovered. I think it was. I tell you what. I think it was
Weinstein. It was Weinstein.
Howard Weinstein. Absolutely right. He uncovered that scandal. You're right. And he uncovered that scandal because he'd spent so long trying to research, you know, Woody Allen's history and the allegations of sexual abuse against children. He became an expert at it and picked up on the Weinstein stuff. You know, it's amazing.
Yeah.
I worked in America, as you know, in the 80s and early 90s. Woody Allen used to play the clarinet in a pub band at a bar called Michael's on the east side. And
yeah, well, that's no excuse.
No excuse at all. But what I'm saying is, you know, for $5, you could go along and watch him. And that was part of his look at me, I'm a nice guy type, image type thing. But underneath it all, everybody had their suspicions about him. And he honestly became the sort of guy you really didn't want to do business with.
What I hate is the way Hollywood has lionized him.
Yeah.
And he seems to walk on water. You know, we had the same scenario with Harvey Weinstein,
yeah,
didn't we?
Yeah.
That people refused to believe that he could possibly be guilty of the things he was accused of. Well, look where he is now, yeah, languishing in jail.
Yeah, exactly.
I actually think that Woody Allen's time will come.
Mm-hmm. Well,
the same as Roman Polanski's time will come. You know,
yeah,
history, time has a way of,
yes,
just sniffing these guys out.
Yes.
And I do think that he will get his eventually.
You could well be right.
This fall in love with Cozy. Nothing says autumn like wrapping up in the rich, warm colors of Minky Couture. From golden ambers to deep burgundy and rustic browns, Minky blankets bring the beauty of the season right into your home. Perfect for crisp evenings, family time, or gifting someone special. Fall in love with Minky and shop your favorite fall colors today at minkycouture.com.
Okay, folks, you are listening to Life on Planet Porky with myself and Leslie Ann Jones, and getting stuck into a few heavy subjects. Let's talk about something which is much lighter and brighter. Now, Leslie Ann, I'm also an aficionado of TV. I know that you're not a great TV watcher, but one thing hit me, which I think is going to be a terrific success. They're going to start a, you know, like Strictly Come Dancing. They're going to start,
yeah,
a Strictly Come flower arranging type show. And Vic Reeves is going to host it. You know, Vic Reeves, the comedian, 61-year-old,
yeah,
Vic Reeves. I think that'll be a tremendous success. I mean, people actually love flowers, don't they?
Oh, they do. But it's not just about flowers, is it? We've had Bake Off, we've had Sewing Bee,
yeah,
there was the Pottery Throwdown, Escape to the Chateau. People love these shows because what they really are is a vehicle for human nature, human, yeah, behaviour, emotions, yeah, passions, what makes us all tick. And we love them because they show us, yeah, as we really are.
Yeah.
Did you watch the Pottery Throwdown? I was quite addicted to that one.
Watch what, sorry?
It was called Pottery Throwdown, and it was a series where week by week the selected guests had to make pots,
no,
and various things out,
no,
of pottery.
No, no.
And it was an elimination thing where somebody leaves each week and so on. I was completely gripped by it.
Really?
And I think that, yes, this flower show will have the same effect.
Well,
because look at the Chelsea Flower Show. It's hugely popular every year, isn't it?
Totally.
Apart from this year.
Yeah, well, obviously. Do you know what? Have you ever been there on the last day? People stagger off carrying all sorts of exhibits where they get for free on the last day. Honestly, you see them all staggering up the King's Road, you know, with all the. Yeah. But I mean, I the only reason I ever went to the Chelsea Flower Show was because it had 30 bars and we did every one of them, you know, as you would at that time, because we were guests to have a look at the flowers.
And you had a lot of celebrities on the first day and everything.
Oh,
so we had to go down and terrorise them, didn't we?
Oh, yeah, definitely. But Alan Brazil and I were actually taken on to judge some, you know, flowers and plants and all that. It was ridiculous. By the time we got to whatever we were judging, we couldn't see straight. We thought, you know,
you thought he was a flower.
I thought he was a flower, and I thought they had 12 petals instead of 6 and all that kind of stuff. But I think it'll be terribly popular. I love flowers, but it's the tending of them. That's why I like this time of the year, because I always buy 3 times a week 2 bundles of daffodils, and daffodils take no arranging whatsoever. I've got a big wide vase. I just plunk 2 bunches of daffodils in, pointing away from each other, and then when the sun gets on them, it's such a beautiful way to lighten up your room by putting them in the window. Do you like flowers?
I absolutely love flowers, especially daffodils,
yeah,
being the sort of Welsh symbol.
Yeah, of course.
So, you know, we always wear a daffodil on St. David's,
yeah,
Day,
right,
and
yeah, yeah,
that kind of thing. Sorry. Do you have green fingers?
No. My housekeeper, who I haven't seen now for a month, does my garden as well. So by now, what we always did the first couple of days after Easter was replant the garden for the season. You see what I mean? Because she comes in sort of October, November and deforests it, so to speak, you know, takes out all the worn plants, all the dead plants and all that, and my hanging baskets and the ones that surround the bird table and all that. And then she comes back and does them all up again in about this time of year, actually, April. So I'm really missing seeing the, but you know, in a normal year, my roof garden now would be a blaze of colour, honestly, you know, with bushes and trees and flowers and plants. And I've got a cactus and I've got ivy up the wall and all that kind of stuff. But none of that's there, I'm afraid. I had another girlfriend once, funnily enough, keep talking about my
girlfriend. How many more girlfriends?
Well, exactly.
Mr. Parry.
And do you know what? she was more interested in flowers and flower shows than spending an idyllic afternoon with me. So, for instance, if I was going to take her for lunch and meet her somewhere and I'd booked a hotel for the afternoon, none of that happened until we went to the Hampton
Court. Well, she was married then.
Yes, that's right, yeah. and nothing happened until we went to the Hampton Court flower show, or we went to the flower show at, I don't know, somewhere else. There's loads of flower shows all over the place, you know. And it had to be the flower show first. So that was always a bit of a nuisance. What I did discover is that, and I didn't realise this, you may well have known this, thousands of people in this country have gardens which they absolutely are devoted to and they tend them day and night. And then they open them to other garden lovers who come and visit their gardens. Did you know that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. We have a lot of that in East Dulwich where I live.
Yeah.
And little leaflet comes around, you know, you can go to number whatever it is, yeah, Barry Road, and go and visit someone's garden and go, ooh, ah.
Yeah.
I've never seen the appeal of doing it.
Neither have I.
Because I think there's a lot of garden envy.
Yeah.
But by the same token, I don't want to spend my time doing the garden. I have a gardener,
yeah,
a little guy called Boyd. He's, yeah, my garden gnome. Ooh. And he comes around every fortnight and, yeah, cuts the grass and tidies up the beds,
yeah,
and so on.
Yeah.
That's enough gardening for me. I like looking at the gardener.
Yeah.
I don't particularly want to do it myself.
No, I can't do it. I don't know anything about gardening, but I do love to see a garden. And for instance, when I was at Nottingham as a student, I used to love the Arboretum because it was such a splash of colour in Nottingham. And, you know, an afternoon in the Arboretum with a couple of bottles of wine was a perfect compromise.
As long as there's wine involved, yeah, you don't care what you do you, really?
That's absolutely right. Now, I'm sure that in your role as a rock chick writer, you're very excited to learn that Girls Aloud might be reforming. Ah!
Oh, I can do without it. I've never really been very big on girl groups, I have to say. And that might sound sexist.
Yeah.
I do admire many female performers, but I'm just not that into girl groups because... Mm. The way they sell themselves is almost always about sex.
Well, you say that. I mean, I don't know anything about Little Mix. I've never heard one of their records. But I feel a bit sorry for them because to me, they look like a marketing tool for an organisation which is clearly making an awful lot of money, and good luck to them. And they're young girls who've been very successful. But one of them called Jessie, she seems to have this permanent sort of trout pout, you know what I mean, and she looks even at a very young age, and I hope I'm not insulting or anything, she looks to have quite a lot of work at a very young age, and I wonder about the manufactured side of what they do.
Well, people have been very unkind to Jessie and Little Mix, and
yeah,
she has, yeah, she's taken quite a lot of abuse over the years for the way she looks. I'm not sure she's had surgery. She does wear a lot of makeup,
yeah,
and there's a lot of artistry going on there, you know, even in lockdown,
yeah, yeah,
when they performed on that concert on TV recently,
yeah,
she was loaded in the makeup, but they are a good group. They are good singers.
Oh, well, that's good.
So, I feel sorry for her a bit, but I just, image-wise, so much of it sends out the wrong message for me to young girls who are thinking to themselves, well, all I need to do is look like that,
yeah,
cavort around a bit, wear as little as possible.
Yeah,
that's
right,
not,
yeah,
the same thing as being a musician. It just, yeah, isn't. And I don't think it's appropriate in this day and age.
Yeah. The other thing is that, I mean, the girl groups, they don't even hold an instrument, do they? They don't in any way pretend to be sort of musicians other than singers. Whereas, of course, you've been used to dealing with some of the greatest musicians of the second half of the 20th century, you know what I mean? But apart from people like the Bangles, I suppose, and Susie Quattro, they're not really, you know, women musicians. Well, Carole King, I suppose, but they're few and far between, aren't they?
Well, you've got Gail Ann Dorsey. I mean, what more do you want? She was an amazing, is an amazing, Gail Ann Dorsey. She plays guitar, or did, with David Bowie. She was the Gang of Four at one point. There are many, female musicians that just, yeah, generally not as celebrated as the men, are they? And I think part of the reason for that is, yeah, because the, yeah, guitar is a phallic symbol.
Yeah, I suppose it is. Yeah, I suppose you're right.
That stopped you in your tracks.
Yeah, it certainly did. Did you ever have anything to do with Suggs from Madness?
Yeah, met him lots of times over the years, did a couple of interviews with them. I've always thought Madness are a great live band because they're completely zany, but they are good musicians. And I love Suggs's voice and his sense of humour, of course.
Yeah, I think he's good. Like, we interviewed him a few times on the radio and all that kind of stuff. He's just had the paperback version of his book come out. Now, we're both Twitter users, aren't we?
And, yes, we are.
You know, I've embraced it wildly and you have as well. The Twitter, of course, was invented and is run by a genius billionaire, you know.
Jack Dorsey.
What's his name?
Jack Dorsey.
Jack Dorsey, that's the guy, yeah. And
he sounds like something out of Dallas, doesn't he?
He does, yeah, he does, yeah. It's a very televisual name, you're absolutely right, Jack Dorsey. But what amazed me was a story I saw about him recently. I mean, these guys, you know, the guy Zuckerman who runs, was he run Facebook, is it? Or
yeah.
Facebook and all that. Why are they so extraordinarily odd in their lifestyles? Like, for instance, Jack Dorsey, you're talking about, his lifestyle regime is so severe. He claims that he goes into a sauna at a temperature of 220 degrees Fahrenheit for 15 minutes, three times a day. And when you know, this story was put to doctors and all that, they said that's actually a death risk. You know what I mean?
Well, that's more than boiling point, I think. The guy must be crazy.
It's more than boiling point of water. Here, I'll read this report to you. In the world of Silicon Valley, where high flyers think little of fads such as dopamine fasting, biohacking, and micro-dosing, Jack Dorsey still manages to stand out. The billionaire chief executive of Twitter is known for brutal morning and evening routines that involve ice baths all day, ice baths, all day fasting, meditation, and a 5-mile walk into work. And all this is on top of running two public companies, Twitter and the payment processing group Square, which I've never heard of, with more than 8,000 employees combined. But one aspect of the 43-year-old entrepreneur's evening drill is attracting attention for the wrong reasons, as insiders begin to doubt whether Mr. Dorsey is being entirely truthful about his regime. He claims that he goes into this sauna, sits in there for 15 minutes at 220 degrees Fahrenheit, that's 104 degrees centigrade, as you quite rightly say, above the boiling point of water. But somebody's pointed out that in places like Finland, where they have championships in how long you can stay in a sauna, the world champ has only ever managed 3.5 minutes at that temperature.
I think he's having us on. And I think it's a very irresponsible thing to do because you're going to get less intelligent people who are going to try this at home.
Yeah.
They always tell us, don't they? Don't try this at home. But people are going to think, well, you know, look what it's done for him. He's a multi-billionaire owner of one of the biggest companies in the world. Yeah. If it's good enough for him, it's good enough for me. And that is irresponsible. He's a very eccentric type. These guys tend to be. I mean, look at Richard Branson. We've all hung out with him over the years. And he's nuts. He's completely weird.
Yeah.
And I think you need to be weird and eccentric to come up with these ideas in the first place. The ideas for the companies that they run, I mean. But I think it's bad form to be telling the rest of the world, I'm who I am because I live like this.
Yeah.
You couldn't possibly endure on a sustained basis that kind of temperature. So I don't believe it for a minute.
Yeah, well, he sticks by it. What I don't understand is that these guys are fabulously wealthy. They could have their pick of any lifestyle they wanted. They certainly have their pick of partners in life, companions, whoever they wanted. And yet they think austerity is the thing to do. Listen to this. Mr. Dorsey checks the tracking ring on his finger to see how well he slept before he even gets out of bed. So he wears this thing on his finger and needs to check how much proper sleep he's had before he finds it suitable to get up. And when he gets up, he has an ice bath already prepared. He steps into the ice bath, right? That was my computer making a noise there. and he gets into the ice bath. Then he meditates in a warm tent sauna. That's not even his own sauna, which is in a little caravan outside his back door. This is followed by a 7-minute workout and a mixture of ingestion of water, salt and lemon for breakfast. He will then fast until the evening when he will eat his one meal of the day. He claims that fasting throughout the working day improves his focus. That sounds to me, Leslie Ann, like a bloody miserable sort of life. Can you imagine if we adopted that lifestyle in Fleet Street in the heyday?
Oh, we'd have been dead in a week. I think he's a bit Howard Hughes, isn't he? He's very eccentric. I think a lot of this is tosh. I think there's an element of if they believe that, they'll believe anything. Yeah. You know, I can't see that he drinks salt every day. Again, he'd be dead.
Yeah, well, he says he does. I just don't understand why they make their lives so miserable when their lives could be so, you know, they could be flying around in their own private aeroplanes and...
Not right now.
No, funny enough.
Maybe he injects disinfectant as well, and maybe where that's where the president got the idea from.
That was extraordinary, wasn't it? Absolutely.
Oh, what a weirdo. Yeah, what a weirdo. I mean, really.
I mean, I have some support for Donald Trump. I think he's like Boris Johnson. I think he raises spirits. He's an optimist. He lifts things. He induces confidence and all that. But what a wacko idea that was.
Did you see Gary Lineker's tweet to Piers Morgan about that?
No.
Because the president has unfollowed Piers Morgan on Twitter, which is hilarious.
Yeah.
And Gary Lineker put out a tweet, I think it was this morning, saying how sorry he feels for him, that he will get over the loss, like it was a broken love affair or something. It was funny.
Well, I saw Piers on his show the morning after that happened, and Piers took it as a badge of pride that he's not bothered that the United States president has unfollowed him on Twitter. But I think Piers is on the brink of going mad, because some of the interviews he's had with politicians, they're not interviews, they've been aggressive attacks on politicians in his studio, or at least on video link at the moment, have really been very uncomfortable for me. I've been sort of watching from behind the couch as he laid into politician after politician. And funny enough, he's fallen out with Lord Sugar in a big way, because Lord Sugar and Piers used to be very big friends. And Lord Sugar has messaged from America, I think Piers should shut up. He's trying to be a martyr. He's trying to look like the leader of the opposition to the government and save the world through this virus. And I think there's a bit about that in Piers. And Piers, of course, is a very old Fleet Street mate of both you and me.
I love Piers. I've always said it. He gave me my best ever job on News of the World.
Yeah.
I had the time of my life working for him there.
Yeah.
And I'm a great champion of Piers.
Yeah.
But I do think he goes too far in some of these political interviews.
Yeah.
And I think he needs to give them a break. I feel that they're all working as hard as they can and they're all doing their best.
Yeah.
And it's not really constructive to be so negative and so critical of these people at this time.
I totally agree with you. You know, he's frightening everybody to death and he's making out that it's much, much worse than the government are telling us. Yet the government is there demanding to know why they haven't done it. And as Lord Sugar pointed out, nobody is trying to deliberately stop things happening to recover from coronavirus. But it's coming us at a very, very sudden rate and responding to it is very difficult. And I agree with you. To me, there's a view knocking around in political circles that Boris Johnson was driven into hospital by the pressure being put on him by people like Piers Morgan. If you're Boris Johnson and you're driving the car, right, imagine you driving your car on a motorway and some tailgate driver comes roaring up behind you, blowing his horn, flashing his lights, honking his horn, swearing at you, you know, shaking his fist. You then become nervous. You then start making decisions which are not normal decisions because you're panicking, you need to get out the way, there's a maniac behind you. And I think there might be an element of that in what Piers is doing to the government.
I've got a feeling Boris is made of stronger stuff. I don't think he'd be driven into the ground by journalists.
You're probably right.
I think, you know, that his Churchillian factor is really coming to the fore.
Yeah.
I think, you know, he is going to pull things back together. It has been a little bit slapdash while he's been off the case.
Yeah, maybe.
But I think from today we will see a difference.
Yeah, well, hope so. Now, talking about Fleet Street, I was very sorry to have read an obituary in the Times, the Thunderer. That's some accolade in life, isn't it? If after you die, you suddenly get an obituary in the Times, okay? But it was it was the obituary of a guy I worked with, and you may have come across, I'm not sure, photographer John Downing.
Oh, I don't remember him,
OK, so John Downing, MBE, was News Photographer of the Year 7 times. This was a guy who really did go to the coalface, OK? You know, he was the guy who, with Danny McGrory, another colleague of mine at the Express, they'd get smuggled into Afghanistan and they would literally live as, Arabian sort of peasants, you know, for 2 or 3 weeks whilst the Russians were occupying Afghanistan, riding around on camels, all this kind of stuff, you know what I mean? I mean, terrifically good guy. I worked with him in riots, funny enough, the Brixton riots, when we were dodging petrol bombs and bricks and police batons and all that.
God, that was a terrible time.
It was a terrible time. I did all those riots. I did Brixton. When I was in the north before I came to London, I did Manchester, Moss Side. I did Liverpool, Toxteth. I did riots all over the north, you know, Leeds.
Riots are us.
Say again. Riots are us.
You were Riots are us.
Yeah. But John was... He, you know, we all have our foibles and all that. John liked young girls. I don't mean illegally young girls. I mean that when he got to sort of his mid-40s, he always had an eye on the youngest female, prettiest reporter in the room, you know.
Oh, dear. Yeah.
And he'd go over and sit on their desk on day one and he'd say in a very smug and sort of, you know, look at me type way, "Hello, I'm Downing." He had such an ego, and I suppose you need a great ego if you're, you want to be a top photographer. And by the way, I'm not speaking ill of the dead. I love John to bits, worked with him many times. But he had such an ego that in the old days, in the dark room, where they used to develop the pictures, obviously, they had a stamp for every photographer so that when the... I know you know all this, Leslie, and this is for the benefit of our listeners, so that when your picture had been printed, they turned it over and they stamped the name on the back, you know, by Tom Smith, by John Downing, whatever. And John was found in the darkroom one night with a Stanley knife and he was scratching off the word John on his stamp. So it just say Downing, you see what I mean? Because he regarded himself as like Litchfield or Bailey, you know what I mean? Or something like that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, he sounds a bit of a creep, actually. A bit of a... Well, Ross Benson turned out to be a creep, didn't he, in the end?
Oh, no, I loved Ross. Oh, no.
Yeah, but he was a shagger as well.
Well, yeah, okay. There's nothing wrong with being a shagger. That doesn't make you a creep. That's a normal human...
Well, it does if you're married, for sure it does. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, funny enough, John Downing and Ross Benson worked an awful lot together.
I bet they did.
Ross always liked to have somebody to hold his hand wherever he went, particularly when he was based in Los Angeles. If he was going on a story, which didn't need a photographer, he'd always take one anyway, because he always liked to have, a
wingman.
You know, yeah, no, that's absolutely right.
But his wife, Ingrid, was horrified when she found out after Ross died how many affairs he'd had over the years. She had no idea.
Really? I can't believe that, because it was all so obvious. I mean, he was having affairs with girls in the office. He was having affairs on every job he went on. There's a very, very strong thought that he and Joan Collins may have had a dalliance, although I have no evidence of that. But Ross used to talk about it very fondly in when we're in Costello's in New York, you know. So he's a very handsome man, Ross, and a tall, handsome chap with a flock of blonde hair. And I can see where his success came from. But to give John his due, he was a terrific photographer. And I tell you, I did a job with him once, strangest thing in the world. Remember Sir Douglas Bader?
Well, he had no legs, did he?
No legs, absolutely right. He was the RAF hero of the Second World War, the legless Douglas Bader, but still flew aircraft, even though he'd lost his legs in a plane crash before the war when he was training. But he came to a function in London one night, and his wife was driving, and they were driving back along the embankment from like the festival hall or something like that. And Sir Douglas died in the passenger seat of the car. And she drove to the hospital, and by the time she got there, he was dead. So it was quite a sudden death. And that was on a Saturday night. On Sunday morning, right, I'm in the office, and I always got in early before anybody else, even the news desk. And the phone rang on the news desk. So I went over and picked it up. And, you know, you're quite nervous as a young reporter when the news desk phone rings. Could be the editor or something, you know what I mean? And this voice said, "Oh, hello." She said, "This is Lady Bader." And I was trying to work out who that was. And I said, "Oh, right, hello, yeah." She said, "I thought I'd better give you a call because I'm afraid Dougie pegged it last night." I said, "I'm sorry?"
Well, he didn't peg it because he didn't have any legs.
That's right, you know. I said, "I'm sorry, what's that?" She said, "Oh," I said, "sorry." And I was trying to scramble my brain together. I said, "Sorry, are we talking here about Douglas Bader?" "Yes, Sir Douglas Bader." I said, and she told me the story, you know, she said, yes, I was coming home. I said, amazing, you know. And so by the time the news editor got in, right, I'd already given him his front page splash because I picked up the phone from
Brilliant.
Lady Border. But that's not the end of the story. The following day, so that was great. The following day, she said that she'd been so impressed with that young man on the Daily Express that he'd like to come down to our home. They live somewhere in Berkshire or something, you know what I mean? I'd be delighted, you know, to have a chat with you. Fantastic. So they sent me with John Downing. And it was unusual because John was a news photographer. John was the guy who was always like, I worked with him once on the Golan Heights in Israel, you know what I mean? But they sent him as a portrait photographer. And he just spent an hour circling Lady Border, taking pictures of her from every angle and all that. And you don't realise how much work goes into portrait photography. I mean, I'm sure you do, because I'm sure you've seen rock stars posing for pictures for hours and hours and hours. But he must have taken 150 snaps. Only one of them ever appeared in the paper.
What used to make me laugh was when, you know, we're talking rolls of film in the old days, and they would shoot sometimes a dozen rolls of film with the subject, just to put them at their ease and get them to trust the photographer
all
and everything.
That, yeah.
They'd go outside and throw all those rolls of film away because they had the very shot they wanted, the very last frame.
Yeah.
They were only looking for one picture, but they spent most of the time with that person building their confidence so that they wouldn't have object to the shape of the shot they actually required.
Yeah, no, I all of that, because John said to her, he said, just ignore me. And he was literally creeping around on the floor, taking, you know, shots from the carpet level, looking upwards, and then...
Oh, he wasn't one of those upskirters, was he, as well?
No, she had trousers on, funnily enough. But, and she was a lady of a certain age, you know. I think she was in her 70s then, by the way. A very nice woman, but... No, I mean, you know, just the mixed potpourri of jobs that you and I go on and do. Have you ever come across, just to get on to a final story? It's been a pleasure to have been doing this again with you today, Leslie Ann, and I have to say.
Always a pleasure, Mike. Thank you.
Whilst people are in self-isolation, anything we can do to help alleviate the gloom, and I hope that this podcast does, then obviously we're very willing to do it. Now, the last person I was going to ask you about is Lawrence Fox. Have you ever had any dealings with Lawrence Fox?
Yeah, he lives down the road from me, actually. I see him around. He's an odd-looking guy, isn't he? He was married to Billie Piper, who I really like.
Yeah.
I really rated her as one of Doctor Who's sidekicks.
Right.
She's got a very nice, natural quality to her.
Yeah.
But there's something rather strange and pompous about that guy.
Well,
I can't quite put my finger on it.
Yeah.
He's got a new girlfriend. I've seen him out there.
Yeah, absolutely. I was going to talk to you about. So... you know, he came to prominence a few months ago when he was on Question Time, and he was asked who he thinks the new leader of the Labour Party would be, and he said Keir Starmer, and then some of the guests on the show who were women said, but there's four female candidates, why Keir Starmer? And he said, oh, all right, any woman then, you know, I mean, he was trying to mock the sort of political correctness of it all and all that, and got into a bit of a spat, And interestingly, because I've done a few shows with Jeremy Vine on Five, you know, Jeremy Vine on Five.
You're very good on that, Mike.
That's very kind of you.
Say.
And I spoke to somebody there. Lawrence Fox had been on there. And a part of the show is sometimes pre-recorded, okay? And he came in, but he brought his guitar. And he said, I want to do something with my guitar. And they said, well, it's not really that sort of show. You know, it's a sort of chat show and all that. I don't care. I want to do something with my guitar. So they relented. And then the part of the show that's pre-recorded, when we finished, he said, I didn't like that, we're doing it again. And they said, no, we can't. You don't understand, Lawrence, this is a very tight schedule. The pre-recorded bit's done, now we've got to go live. And he was very, very demanding. But I, you know, can quite accept that. I can quite accept if people want to sort of strive for perfection and do it that way. And I thought he was brilliant in his portrayal of a sergeant in, what was it called? It was the one that followed Inspector Morse. Anyway, he played a detective, and I thought he was very good. But what really caught my attention, Leslie, and this will interest you, is his new girlfriend is a lady called Madeline Grant, okay? And she herself is an academic. She's previously from Oxford University. And she's famous because a few years ago she was looking to be voted something like president of the Oxford Union or something like that. And when she put down qualifications, she said, I've got a great rack. And she...
Oh, dear, oh, dear.
Yeah. And she came under terrible assault from all the old, you know, pompous academics at Oxford. But that, to me, is my sort of girl.
Well, it's a kind of news headline. We come from Fleet Street. We know about tabloid headlines. You know, maybe like him, she was sending the situation up and championing the cause of women without being too serious about it. The trouble is academics can take themselves too seriously. It's always a great breath of fresh air to come across one who doesn't.
Yeah. Oh, no, absolutely. I'm just looking at this report here. Lawrence Fox was Sergeant Hathaway in the ITV series Lewis. It was quite acrimonious, his breakup with Billy Piper, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. Such a shame because there are children involved as well. But hopefully he'll be in a nice new relationship now where the kids will be embraced on both sides and, you know, they get to benefit because they have two mother figures in their lives. Yeah. Hopefully that will happen.
That's right. Wasn't Billy Piper formerly married to Chris Evans?
Chris Evans, yeah.
Right, yeah. Well, I work in the same building as Chris now, so I get on with him very well.
She was very sweet about it because he obviously had amassed a great fortune. Yeah. And she said, I didn't earn it. I don't want any of it. Mm. And she walked away and they parted amicably. Although I've always wondered about that, because if you part amicably from somebody, why did you part in the first place if you're still getting on?
Yeah, well, who knows? Human relationships are the most complicated form of science, aren't they, really?
In it.
I think Chris bought her a Ferrari before she even had a driving license or something. You know, he's that sort of guy. But anyway, there we are. So, Leslie-Ann, thank you very much indeed. It's been a pleasure, as always. Just let everybody know, we are striving now. Once I've mastered the technology, which I have to say, I kind of screwed up a little bit this morning from the start. But
we're getting there, aren't we?
We're getting there. So every Tuesday and Friday, we're hoping to put these podcasts out. Folks, stick with it. We hope it helps in the gloom and doom, which, you know, we can see signs of a little alleviation. And we'll be back with you on Friday. Leslie-Ann, take care as always. Stay safe. And, you know, let's wait for the sun to rise again.
Stay safe.
Indeed. When he got to sort of his mid-40s, he always had an eye on the youngest female, prettiest reporter in the room, you know.
Oh, dear.
And he'd go over and sit on their desk on day one, and he'd say in a very smug and sort of, you know, look-at-me type way, "Hello, I'm Downing." He had such an ego, and I suppose you need a great ego if you're, you know, you want to be a top photographer. And by the way, I'm not speaking ill of the dead. I love John Tibbetts, worked with him many times. But he had such an ego that in the old days, in the dark room, where they used to develop the pictures, obviously, they had a stamp for every photographer so that when the... I know you know all this, Leslie-Ann, this is for the benefit of our listeners. So that when your picture had been printed, they turned it over and they stamped the name on the back, you know, by Tom Smith, by John Downing, whatever. And John was found in the dark room one night with a Stanley knife, and he was scratching off the word John on his stamp so it just say Downing, you see what I mean? Because he regarded himself as like Litchfield or Bailey, you know what I mean, or something like that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, he sounds a bit of a creep, actually. A bit of a... Well, Ross Benson turned out to be a creep, didn't he, in the end?
Oh, no, I loved Ross. Oh, no.
Yeah, but he was a shagger as well. Oh,
yeah, okay. There's nothing wrong with being a shagger. That doesn't make you a creep. That's a normal human...
Well, it does if you're married.
It's difficult going out with three women who all work in the same building at the same time.